Imagine a pill that can improve your focus, your memory, your sleep. A catalyst to improve your brain chemistry. Dr. Bill's Cognition Plus is truly the smarter in an hour pill. A combination of amino acids, trace minerals, and B vitamins, Cognition Plus is made with specialized herbal extracts that will enhance and support brain function. Our customers say,
I feel more focused.
My memory's getting better.
I can work longer with more useful hours.
Power up your neurotransmitters that have been depleted, like dopamine and norepinephrine. Stimulate the release of others, like serotonin and oxytocin. Improve circulation and energy production. Protect your mind and your loved ones today. Order Dr. Bill Deagle's Cognition Plus at 888-212-8871 or go online to NutriMedical.com. That's 888-212-8871 or NutriMedical.com. And listen to the NutriMedical Report on the Genesis Radio Network with open lines every weekday. NutriMedical.com, bringing nutrition and medicine together.
This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNLive.com today.
The NutriMedical Report. We are having some minor technical issues here connecting to the studio through Skype to Berlin, Germany with Harley Schlanger. His usual spot here is the first hour on Wednesdays. He'll be here regularly Wednesdays unless there's some major meeting he's meeting. And it's important to understand that we have to provide you... Oops, here we go. Let's see. Audio settings. Okay. Good. So it looks like we have... Harley, can you just speak? I want to make sure we have enough volume.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you very well, indeed, okay. Harley, you have a lot of issues to cover. You are one of the main representatives of the LaRouche Foundation. The websites are LaRouche, LaRouchePAC.com, and the journal, of course, the Executive Intelligence Review, and of course you have both major articles as well as video and live conferences, is the EIR, Executive Intelligence Review, is LaRouche, LaRouchePUB.com. I know you're kind of scrambling to get some information over from your Houston office to me, and I wonder, I don't know if you were able to do that, but what are the latest meetings in Europe? We, of course, have the rise of the AfD in Germany, which, of course, I'm very familiar with, is the Nationalist Party in Germany. Angela Merkel's had the lowest percentage turnout, although she did cling on to government. She's significantly weakened in Germany. What other things are going on in Europe?
Well, let me start with the German election, and then I can pick up some other things like the Catalonia vote in Spain and and the operations that are being run to break up the nation state. With the AfD in Germany finished third, but that was not so much a positive vote for the AfD as a rejection, a real rejection of Merkel's party and the Social Democrats, who have had they've held power since between them since the end of the World War II. And they were in a coalition government, the Social Democrats and the Christian Democrats, and both of them got their lowest vote totals. The Christian Democrats, Merkel's party, lowest vote totals since 1949.
Wow, 1949.
And the Social Democrats, lowest totals since Bismarck in the 1880s.
Wow.
So it was a rejection of both of those parties because neither of them offered any solutions. Now, the AfD is a mix. It's anti-Merkel, it's anti-Social Democrats, it's anti-immigration. It's a lot of antis, but its positive program has been all over the place. But most of the vote for them reflected the same dynamic we saw with the Brexit vote, with the Trump vote, and even, in reality, with the vote in Catalonia to separate from Spain. There's a total bitterness around the world, especially in the transatlantic region, against the existing establishment, the existing elites, including the media.
Right.
And we see that in vote after vote after vote. We saw it in the Alabama primary, where the Republican Party leadership, McConnell, Paul Ryan, and the Chamber of Commerce, all endorsed the interim Senator Luther Strange, and they convinced Trump to support him. But Bannon and others and the real Trump people supported Judge Roy Moore, and he won by 6 points.
I think that Trump actually decided quietly supported Moore, but he was trying to walk through this for McConnell, who he appointed his wife, Elaine Chao, to one of his committees of his so-called ruling government. And
McConnell's wife is the transportation secretary.
Right.
I think you're right, because when Trump spoke at Dr. Strange's rally the Friday before the vote, he said, look, maybe I made a mistake in this. So I think behind the scenes, the Trump people wanted to send a message to McConnell, which is, you either get on the team or we're going to start running people against you. And one of the people who got the message was Senator Corker of Tennessee,
right,
who recently has been speaking out against Trump, who suddenly become the darling Republican of the mainstream media. And when it became clear that McConnell's guy lost in Alabama, despite spending $30 million in a Republican primary,
right,
that I think Corker saw the writing on the wall and he left. And I think that's an important message for those moderate so-called Republicans who are really still stuck in the Bush era and in the Wall Street camp.
They're basically a minor level swamp monster, just like for 20 years giant Luther Strange was lobbying for various industries and so on, so he's a swamp monster. And he got appointed to the interim senator, but he wasn't going to get anywhere unless he had inside connections with the deep state. And McConnell is playing games. And McConnell is one of these rhino Republicans that really didn't want to move forward with the Trump agenda, which is really essential. I mean, right now our premiums here in California have gone up 40% again. Another jump, ridiculous jump.
Well, McConnell has opposed virtually everything that Trump has tried to do. The mainstream Republicans, remember, joined with the Democrats to vote new sanctions on Russia, which seriously damaged Trump's agenda of working with the Russians. They've sabotaged any effort he's made on the infrastructure bill, on the health care bill, and so on. But in that context, a very interesting thing happened yesterday when Trump was leaving Puerto Rico, which is he did an interview with Geraldo Rivera on Fox.
Right. You saw that.
He said, we have to wipe out the debt of Puerto Rico.
Right.
Now, that's $71 billion, much of which is owed to Wall Street and funds managed by Wall Street firms.
Right.
And the media is trying to say, well, this will hit the person in the mainstream because it's their pension funds.
No, it won't.
Well, everybody who has pension funds has them invested for them, for the most part, by Wall Street.
Right.
And Wall Street makes money by buying and selling worthless debt. So they take your money, your pension money, and put it into these boondoggles. Now, Puerto Rico, here's the important thing, the reason I wanted to bring this up, because people are still saying, is Trump sold out, is Trump compromised? I think his agenda has been seriously damaged by the media, by the deep state, and by the so-called moderate Republicans working with the Hillary Clinton Democrats. But what we see with this decision he made on Puerto Rico is that there's an easy possibility for him to break completely out of this and turn against Wall Street. And his announcement on the debt moratorium, look, the media that's been attacking Trump on Puerto Rico, they gave Obama a pass when the debt crisis hit Puerto Rico, and Obama put a bunch of bankers in charge of a financial oversight committee to take over the budget
right.
of the island.
Right.
So Obama worsened the crisis by putting in this committee that imposed austerity on a very poor people.
Right.
Now, if Trump is going to say the debt, what he said is wave goodbye to that debt. And he said, even if it hits Goldman Sachs. Now, that's sending some shivers on Wall Street today because it raises the whole question about what about the $13 trillion in corporate junk debt that's sitting on the books of corporations and also banks? What about the hundreds of trillions of dollars in derivative obligations? Will Trump say, wave goodbye to that? Well, he should. And if he does, he better have an alternative credit policy set to go. And that's what we're telling him. Go with the Hamiltonian national credit policy. What Kennedy was trying to do with the Treasury Department in 1963, to extend credit directly, not going through the banksters through the Federal Reserve.
Right. Well, you know, though, why Hamilton did his situation is the British wouldn't even sell looms or material to even build guns or to create cloth or anything. So the Hamiltonian credit system was so they could buy the material to start building their own factories. In fact, the Industrial Revolution came out of the pressure that Britain wouldn't cooperate by even sending material over to even start building our factories. So we did it on our own, and we had to have our own credit system to actually allow industry to have the money to start industrializing. And
not only wouldn't they allow the credit, but what the British did is they wouldn't allow the intellectual property
exactly.
to come over to the United States.
Yeah,
they cut that off.
Right.
They
actually
also told the colonies what they could invest in. They were not allowed to invest in their own industries.
Right, and this is a Hamiltonian system. That, by the way, the Chinese took all these good things from the American Revolution economically and industrially, and they implemented them. That's how clever they were. They actually did the Hamiltonian system recently, didn't they, since 2008?
Well, and especially since 2013, 2014, when Xi Jinping announced that the New Silk Road would become the world land.
Keep that thought. We'll be right back with Harley. We're going to go to break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Maybe not.
All shoppers for the truth. You're going to find it here, and Harley is connected by Skype all the way to Berlin, Germany, for the LaRouche Foundation. Of course, the link to the main website is LaRouche, LaRouchePAC.com. The EIR Executive Intelligence Review is at LaRouchePUB.com. Harley, on the break, I just mentioned a kind of brief thing, which I'll mention later. Hour number three, I'm going to talk about my analysis of the forensics and our solutions to the Mandalay massacre, and to the whole idea of how we can stop pre-crime and other issues. There really is a solution. In fact, you mentioned on the break the underlying mental health of the population, the media, polarizing civilization, the globalists trying to get rid of nation states. All of these things are getting resistance. The rise of the AfD in Germany is a good example that there's pushback with Brexit, AfD, Trump, and multiple nations now that don't want globalism and the dissolution of nation states and borders. They don't want it. They don't want a totalitarian state of control by so-called pseudo-intellectuals around the world, do they?
No, and I think to go back to the Puerto Rico question, you get a sense of how the media is playing this to create the most divisive polarization that they can.
Right.
You see the story that they say, well, Trump is helping Florida and Texas, but not Puerto Rico, meaning that a Hispanic population isn't going to be helped by Trump. First of all, they're lying about that. Secondly, who do you think lives in Houston? Houston is over 50% minorities now.
I know, it's ridiculous.
Asian, Mexican-American, and African-American. So are parts of Florida. So
right, a huge part of Florida is Puerto Rican. And a lot of the new Puerto Ricans, by the way, are flipping from being Democrat to Republican, which is why they won the Electoral College there. A lot of the Puerto Ricans are becoming new Republicans, aren't they? And they're not regular Republicans, they're becoming populist Republicans, because the old party, both the old Democratic Party and the old Republican Party, is dead. They're gone now.
Well, both parties voted for the PROMESA bill, which when Puerto Rico defaulted in 2015 on 50-something million in debt, and that put in the question the whole, at that time, $66 billion. Now it's about $72 billion.
Yeah.
It's the debt of Puerto Rico. That's debt that's held by vulture funds and speculators, and also it's in people's pension funds because the investment bankers put it there.
Right.
Now, at the same time, PROMESA, which was supported by leadership of both parties and backed by Obama, said the solution to Puerto Rico is the same thing that was done to Greece and Italy. Austerity, austerity, and austerity.
Isn't that sick, man?
All austerity does is it drove out the rest of the industry that existed there. It cut medical care, it cut education programs, and it created a large flow of people from Puerto Rico to the United States, to the mainland. Now, at the same time, you see this line that Trump is not helping Puerto Rico. he's the one who brought up doing away with the debt, whereas Obama treated the debt as sacrosanct.
Right.
So, you know, if the media really cares about the people of Puerto Rico, they would be applauding Trump's statement.
Right.
Now, at the same time, Bill, I just have to tell you on a personal note of friends of mine who were in Houston.
Right.
Who said that following the Charlottesville media hype, that the country's divided, it's divided into racial, ethnic, and so on.
Oh, that's
right. Near Civil War state. One of my associates reported on this interesting thing of boats with Confederate emblems on them that are part of the Cajun Navy,
right,
going into the poorest neighborhoods of Houston, picking up boatloads of African Americans and
right,
Hispanic people who were flooded and were in danger.
Right.
And it didn't matter to them, the race or the ethnicity or the background, that Americans come together under circumstances like this. And so what you see is a civil war is being provoked.
Oh, yeah.
By people like George Soros, by Black Lives Matter, which is funded by Soros, by the Antifa, which, you know, the Antifa used to be the Revolutionary Communist Party, which was the Maoist organization in the United States.
Right.
And now suddenly they're being cheer-led by the New York Times and the Washington
Post. That's crazy,
Post,
isn't it?
As fighters for freedom.
Yeah, we don't know the motive yet of this man, Craddock, but nevertheless, let's say we suspend that for now. But the net effect is the left is trying to use this as a motive to either do what's called a gun grab, which will provoke a civil war, and wouldn't be effective anyway. For example, they tried to do a gun grab in Canada over the last 15 years, and the Conservative Party, who passed the gun registration laws, realized after 10 years of it not working and being embarrassed, they actually got rid of the gun registration laws. What they need to do, and I mentioned this briefly, what I'll expand on it, is register people. And I mean by that this way. 3 M's. If you track where your money is going, if you're buying bomb materials, nuclear isotopes, biological weapons, or things to make fully automatic weapons, we need to have you visit. Number 2, metadata. We know the metadata on everybody. The FBI, the CDC, the NSA, no such agency. We know from Five Eyes and others, we know exactly metadata on everybody. It doesn't matter what your religious or other background. If you have above a certain score, or if you have a past history of mental illness, that's the 3rd M, we need to make you a visit. You register people, not guns. Now, you don't want people to have fully automatic weapons or nuclear weapons or biological weapons. But nevertheless, with the data gathering we have, there's no need. The idea of trying to gather 381 million guns and billions of bullets is insane. It won't work anyway. And even if you try to, you're going to get a civil war. The problem is the globalists want a civil war, and that's why whether this guy's a nutball and just did this spontaneously or he's a copycat, we don't care. The deep state are salivating and trying to turn this into a polarizing event. Rather than trying to find a solution, like, for example, one of the ones in the room, every high hotel that could be over an open space like a roadway or an open casino should have a ballistic thing in the ceiling of the room. And if you blow in a window, either you fall and bump into it because you're drunk, or you hit it with a hammer because you're going to shoot at people, it should blast this thing out that just knocks you to the ground with a, what do you call it, a confusing agent, which we can make all kinds of confusing materials that will blind you, make you barf your guts up, or you can't physically shoot a gun or do anything. And that would simply allow the police to come in, they know where you are, your door would open up, they find you on the floor barfing your guts up, and you couldn't shoot yourself or anybody else. And that would solve the problem. So every hotel room, so if you blow one of these Lexan windows, which, you, by the way, you have to hit pretty damn hard with a big, heavy hammer, they're not going to blow out easily. If you bust out a Lexan window in a high hotel room, it should knock you to the ground to protect you and anybody else and make sure you won't fall out the window.
Let me bring this back to this question, the deeper question you were talking about earlier, which is the question of the mental health of Americans.
Right.
And what we see in times of crisis is that leaders can rally the American people to take on causes.
Right.
The reason the deep state is so worried about Trump has nothing to do with whether he's under Putin's control.
Right.
It's that he was not under their control and he was prepared to break the geopolitical doctrine that's characterized this country for the last three, four decades. This country was having its sovereignty removed with free trade agreements, with banking deregulation, and we were being put into wars on the basis of lies and
right. It was being basically chemically, militarily, and geopolitically castrated and they were trying to push tribalism and identity politics to destroy the fabric of America, right?
And that's how you see the coverage of things such as Puerto Rico, Charlottesville, and so on.
Exactly.
Feeds into the kind of mentality that would cause people to say the only way to be safe is to have a...
Investing is a long...
You're a very brilliant man, and you have a great team there at LaRouche Foundation. And, you know, one of the principles that I think LaRouche has preached is the idea of energy flux density, and the ideas of financial things like Hamiltonianism is the idea that you have to build up the velocity of credit, which the Hamiltonian system did, not just the velocity of money. You have to have money that's based on building up real economy, not just buying out assets and amalgamating corporations. Which, by the way, these people, because they've taken off in the Clinton administration in 97, they took off the Glass-Steagall Bill, which is there since the 1930s, to protect assets and amalgamation of what we call really bad debt being sold as really good investments. And this has literally catastrophized the world economy, hasn't it? They set up a Jenga stick game where if one stick gets pulled, the whole economy of the world collapses. And Trump is basically the firewall between that and a worse than 1929 crash. So I'd like you to expand on that, because LaRouche has had solutions for decades. He's even gone to prison over it because he had solutions to problems that the powers that be in the intel and deep state don't want. They don't want a Trump or a LaRouche around, do they?
Well, to start with, there's a very interesting article that an associate of mine just wrote on Robert Mueller as a legal assassin, an amoral legal assassin. And what it starts with is Mueller's leadership of the Get LaRouche Task Force in the 1980s. And the reason this is important is that it was based on an FBI memo from 1983 when LaRouche was working with Ronald Reagan, saying that LaRouche is probably a dupe or controlled by Russian interests.
Oh, no. That sounds and like echoes of the same. Yeah. And they got Mueller, the same player back in the game, right?
Well, Mueller was an assistant for William Weld for a while, and then when Weld went to the Justice Department in 86, Mueller took over the Get LaRouche Task Force. The first effort to put LaRouche in prison was defeated by a judge in Boston who ruled that there was a fraud against the court carried out by Mueller's team.
Wow.
So Mueller took it to Alexandria, Virginia, the sort of home court, Washington, D.C. basis. Anyway, the whole story is in this article. People can go to executiveintelligencereview.com to get this article. But the reason I bring it up is that what LaRouche was doing in the 70s and 80s was laying the basis for what today is reemerging as the idea of the American system, which has been written out of the history books, written out of the economics departments, the business departments. Business schools and economics degrees are now basically a branch of a fraudulent attempt to apply algorithms that are maybe more appropriate for rocket science to financial investments and financial planning. It removes any effort from building up, as you said earlier, the physical economy. And what LaRouche has said is we have to get back to credit to fund the physical economy. The last president who was moving to do that was John F. Kennedy in June of 1963 with an executive order establishing treasury notes so that the U.S. government could directly provide credit to industry without having to go through Wall Street. And we know what happened to John F. Kennedy.
Right. That's probably the primary reason why they assassinated him.
That's one of the main reasons, I think. That
right.
Plus, he was moving toward a potential deal with the Russians, the Soviet Union. Now, based on the idea that we can't go to war, Trump had the same idea. That's why he wanted to talk to Putin. This is why the deep state is trying to get rid of Trump. Not because Trump is the greatest person ever, but because he saw something evolve over 20 to 30 years of a deep state intelligence community, financial community, taking over the power of the United States to make war.
Right.
And to use this to create huge amount of debt, huge amounts of money for the private contractors, and to destroy any opposition to this financial control.
But it's an impotent war. In other words, they wanted to provoke war, but they don't have as proper protection against incoming missiles like North Korea, or being able, with the sequestration that Obama did, destroying the military so it's not ready to actually show strength, which is the way you negotiate peace. And as a result, you've actually had a situation where America's in much more danger now than it was in the past, and Trump's trying to fix that.
Well, also, the way you fix that, the primary way you fix that, is you have an industrial economy, you have an economy that has competent infrastructure. You know, Eisenhower was one of the last generals who understood the relationship of infrastructure to defense. That was the whole idea behind the highway system.
Right.
And he learned that from his apprenticeship under Douglas MacArthur. So you have to connect a physical economy and to one other thing, which is a healthy workforce, a healthy population, which goes to work each day with the idea that they're going to make the world better. They're going to produce something that's necessary, not some gadget or gizmo that a kid will buy and will break within 2 weeks, and they'll have to go out and replace it.
Right.
You know, the idea of a 4 or 5% growth rate, or even a 3.5% to 4% growth rate, based on real production, investment in infrastructure, which doesn't return money immediately because you don't have to do it.
Right.
The returns from infrastructure are long-term improvements in the productivity of labor.
Right. There's three areas of infrastructure you've talked about in the past. Roadways, high-speed railways, and high-speed fiber optics, for example. Those three areas, and computing technology, nuclear fusion energy, and maybe buried plasma ray, tube distribution systems for power so it can't be disrupted by earthquakes or superstorms. And we need to do these things because the world is going to become more and more violent with these superstorms, because as we head into a moderate cooling period, we've talked about this yesterday with our guest Lowell Ponte, and we'll talk about this more. The astrophysics is we're going to see more and more extreme weather, which we could turn away, but we didn't. But we're going to see more and more extreme weather that's going to challenge us and destroy the coastal areas of not only our country, but other countries. And we're not ready for it. We're not ready for any of this stuff. We're not ready for the destruction of infrastructure or the fact that we can have an EMP from a small nation that can fire from a small weapon hundreds of miles off our coast and then blast out parts of the United States that they can't repair for months or years. We're not ready for anything, are we?
And Bill, what I just went through in terms of LaRouche's approach is why he's respected internationally and why the Chinese turned to Mrs. LaRouche for guidance in the development of the new Silk Road policy. And, we're at the point now where we could have a dramatic change because of what the Chinese are doing with a number of Asian countries. Prime Minister Abe of Japan is going to Beijing. He was just meeting with the Chinese. You're going to have a Japanese-Chinese-Russian alliance that will bring in South Korea and will talk to the North Koreans about stopping the silliness and becoming part of the new Silk Road. Now, President Trump has oriented toward that at times. He's been pulled away from it, largely because he still has neocons in the intelligence community and in the military.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of people pulling him to make policies like that. Missile attack against Syria was not founded on facts. And that's a big mistake, but I don't think when his general at the time was pushing down to deploy 150,000 to 250,000 troops in Syria, he said, it's not going to happen on my watch. So Trump has enough sense in his own, even without Bannon, to actually say, no, that's not a wise thing to do.
Well, and the other thing is that Trump has a certain sense that the American people are tired of war, they're tired of being lied to, and the question is, will they know where to go to find the truth?
Right.
And one of the things we're initiating tomorrow is, and I'll mention this later in the program, but Mrs. LaRouche, who is a very prominent figure in China, in Germany, and in the United States, will be giving a weekly webcast, half-hour webcast, to bring the international strategic situation to an American audience.
Will that be up on the LaRouchePAC.com website?
It's a different website. It's the New Paradigm Schiller Institute.com.
Give me that link and I'll post it up on today's podcast when I put it up over on deagle-network.com, because that's where we post all of our shows after.
Yeah, I'll send it to you, and I think what people will find is a completely different view of what's happening in the United States, because I can see it from here in Europe. You know, the question I've gotten the last couple of days is, how could something like Las Vegas happen in the United States? And I said, well, why are Germans still fighting in Afghanistan? Why were the French taking leadership in Libya?
Right.
Because you have a transatlantic elite, which is crazy.
Right. Exactly. The average people have got much more sense than the elite that are psychotic, demonic, globalists. That we will try to provide the very best guess and the most intelligent analysis of the real situation and solutions to every problem facing us in our health, our geopolitical or spiritual challenges on planet Earth. And they're all linked together, by the way. For example, let's say we talk about Russia. The worst thing you can do when the Russians are putting missiles and getting paranoid by putting missiles that can strike every square inch of Europe with intermediate-range nuclear, chemical and biological scalar weapons, which they have, is to terrify the Russians. And they had a war game earlier in the spring where they, you know, I think like a quarter of their population simulated an attack from the West of the United States against Russia. Now, if you want to fix this, because we're going to supplant much of the Middle Eastern and Russia as the primary oil and gas producer and the number one coal producer on the planet, we need to start rebuilding the infrastructure and the business environment in Russia so that they can collaborate with Europe and they can cross-pollinate each other and build up newer technology. For example, we don't have a mile of high-speed rail here. I think they have, 40,000 kilometers in China right now. At the rate they're going...
It's about 22,000 so far. Oh. They're going to have 40,000 by 2022.
Okay, I was wrong on the dates. But let's say that's a lot. We don't have any. What we should be doing is making some kind of deal, whether we bring over work visas or whatever, Chinese engineers to train our engineers to take the latest version of technology, which they've upgraded from Bombardier in Quebec and the high-speed rail in Europe, and get it going here in America. We should have a northern tier, a midwestern tier, and a southern tier, and then across the coastal areas. And it should be in places where it's away from fault zones or forest fires or things that will actually interfere with that high-speed rail transport. We should also have ways of totally recycling all of our materials so we don't have giant waste piles where we turn things back to their atomic level, so we don't have a waste dump in the North Pacific Ocean that's three times the size of Texas. There's more plastic now in the oceans than fish. And then when I hear people talk about global warming and they say about carbon credits, you're killing the benthic layer of the oceans with pollution. It's not surprising that the phytoplankton can't convert, you know, carbon dioxide back to oxygen. That's why it's spiking. It's not just spiking because we're putting out more, because Mount Erebus in Antarctica generates 10,000 times more gases that can destroy the ozone layer or carbon dioxide than 10,000 largest oil and gas or coal-fired power plants. People don't understand this. They don't understand that we can do simple things to fix the planet and make it us not become an extinction-level event. To increase, as LaRouche says, the energy flux density, and to make our planet an intelligent and thriving organism as a planet.
The way to do that is you have to change the way people think. And people have been taught to think that they're consumers, that the most important thing is to take care of their immediate sensory needs. And education has shifted away from teaching critical thinking to being able to answer set questions to show that you can basically be a kind of computer,
yeah,
as opposed to creative thinker.
I have a more disgusting version of that. I call it the maggot theory of education. The top level professors are what I call 10th level maggots, and they have to regurgitate information, like literally intellectually vomit it up, and you have to consume it and regurgitate what they've done, and it shouldn't be altered, in other words. In other words, you get your PhD or master's degree, not because you're intellectually challenging and creating something new beyond your professors, but by asking better questions and seeking better scientific paradigms. No. They want you to just continue not shaking up the party line. This is like 1984, you know, where you have to, the Institute for Truth, in other words. And this is what the globalists want.
The other point on that is that the good professor in the old days was one who wanted to have a student surpass him.
Right.
and not become his model himself on him.
Yeah.
You know, Schiller talked about the good scholar who loves the truth more than any system.
Right.
And what we have instead is education based on systems.
Right.
And truth is a casualty of that. You
right.
know, there's an old Yiddish proverb that said, the truth never dies, but it lives a miserable life.
I love that.
And
yeah, you know the thing about it? My grandfather spoke Yiddish, and I can tell you, he was a Lebanese Maronite Christian with some Jewish background, a Hebrew background. And what I find funny is that they're very realistic, these little proverbs. They crystallize a portion of wisdom that we often forget, don't we?
Well, this is what we see with the fake news today.
Right.
Let's say the way people try to counter it is with a different set of facts. Instead of looking at the question of who's generating so-called facts and for what purpose, what's the intention behind the selection of the so-called facts? Because you can say things which are true that don't tell you anything about what's actually happening.
Well, that's why I don't call the news, I call it the snooze. Instead of N-E-W-S, I call it the S-N-O-O-Z-E.
And what you have in terms of the American people are people who choose their news station the same way they used to choose country western or rap or rock, you know, as though these are a series of choices you make that fit your particular feeling state, as opposed to being a critical thinker who can approach things from the outside. You know, the other famous Yiddish saying is, when you have two people with two opinions, always look for the third.
Well, I'll give you an example. I had an argument yesterday with one of my younger sons. He's very intelligent. But he like younger people, a lot of time their education systems are trained to actually think along rails, I call it. But I'm an out-of-the-box. I call myself, although I'm a Messianic Christian believer, I'm a box agnostic. I don't believe in boxes. They're not even in my universe. And so I said, you know, what we need is not gun registration. We need to have people registration. He said, what do you mean? You want a police state? He said, no. We already know the metadata. We know who's a bad actor or going to do pre-crime. It doesn't matter what your religious background is, or if you're a drug cartel guy or Muslim or a white supremacist, whatever. We have enough metadata and your internet and your sales and purchase of things. And if you have past medical records that you're having mental illness from the military, whatever, we have enough metadata to be able to know who's going to do something bad. This guy could have been picked up if they actually had this metadata and used it. I guarantee you it's sitting somewhere in some database. The biggest thing I found working at deep state parts of the government, in U.S. military, you know, Missile Defense Command, working with Special Op Forces, Delta Force, and other agencies, is they didn't talk to each other. They didn't. They were almost like, if we want to call it, they had an encampment of data they didn't want to share with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Which I find crazy. And I'm not talking about a police state. I'm simply saying, look, if you're a good person, you're doing the right thing, you know, it's just like, put it this way with God. If you're doing the right thing, God will kind of pat you on the head, and you're going to go through life because things, sometimes miserable things happen to good people. But if you're good people, God's not going to whack you. Or nations, he's not going to whack you. But the fact is, if you're doing bad things, eventually something's going to come against you, whether it's an enemy or bad circumstances or really bad choices that are going to create a situation where it's going to be catastrophic. Well, we absolutely, if we apply these principles, instead of registering guns, we register people. And by registering, I mean, I'm just talking about a system where we don't go and invade people's lives or go and start with SWAT teams going to homes. If we've got a really good reason why, because you've been buying bomb materials like the two boys that were building pipe bombs in their garage, and the police and the local authorities knew about this in advance of it. Like, why didn't they do something? I don't know. Why did they let it happen? Why did the Sonarov brothers, after the Russian intelligence agencies told them that, hey, these guys are dangerous, they went to Chechnya and they're planning to do this, this, and this, and they even visited the Sonarov brothers beforehand. Okay? So even the father of this guy in the Pulse bombing, he notified the government. He actually had a radio television show in Afghanistan. He even notified the local authorities and the FBI that, hey, my son's a crackpot and you better go visit him. And they didn't. So, you know, this is not an intel failure, it's an intel catastrophe, because we decide not to invade people's privacy when there's really good reason why we should, right? Or even do a mental status evaluation and say, look, I don't want to restrict people, I just don't want them to have fully automatic weapons, nuclear materials, biological weapons, or chemical weapons, but anything else they have, and you certainly can't remove those guns from people, because trying to do so will create a civil war. You know, but you do want to make sure that if someone's a nutball or becomes demented or joins an extreme group or starts internet, you know, collaboration or sending money to places where you shouldn't, we need to know those people need a visit. It's real simple, isn't it?
Well, you know, I think I wasn't prepared to talk about this question because...
Well, and the reason why I say that is because of ties with Germany. The AfD party is some of the people are really reasonable, other people are unreasonable in the AfD. And this has to be settled in a logical way like LaRouche does, or it'll go off the rails to extremism, right?
Well, the important thing is that there are solutions to the problems that exist.
Exactly.
And one of the ways you know the solutions is you watch the deep state and see what they're most frightened of.
Exactly.
And the record from 1970 forward is that they were terrified that LaRouche would make a breakout into the public, which we did in the mid-1980s. We started winning elections. And that's when the Get LaRouche Task Force was put together. But even though they put him in jail, they couldn't stop the ideas because, as LaRouche always says, you can't beat me because I'm not going to quit.
Well, you know, I heard a saying years ago that people are not bulletproof, but ideas and philosophies are.
Well, and he's 95 years old now, and he's still going, and Mrs. LaRouche is an international figure.
Yeah.
And we've recruited him.
A business and that you can really trust, a medical doctor-endorsed product that is backed by honest research and true integrative science, then search no further. Go to NutraMedical.com for Dr. Bill Deagle's Nutriodine, proven time and time again to be the very best iodine available for you. Nutriodine is the only Tesla-activated monatomic plasma iodine in the world. It optimizes mitochondrial function and generation of new mitochondria, from totally neutralizing the venom from a desert recluse spider bite in Southern California to eliminating malaria parasites reported by medical missionaries in Central India. Dr. Bill's Nutriodine is simply the most powerful healing formula there is. Nutriodine clears the body of all known pathogens, restores it to an alkaline state, and even promotes stem cell regeneration. Order Dr. Bill's Nutriodine today at 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutraMedical.com.